The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Chairs No Waiting, episode number 666, 666 and 7/8. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the fine folks over at weaversdepartmentstore.com. Drop by over at Weavers and pick up some of the new items they've got over there. They've got a long sleeve sheriff's shirt. So it's a t-shirt, but it's a long sleeve. It's got Andy's, it looks like Andy's shirt if you're wearing it. It's a great shirt. You might also want to check out Randy Turner's new book, The Mayberry Travel Guide. Head over to weaversdepartmentstore.com and check it out. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners just like you. The executive producer of episode number 666 is Core Owl. Hello, everybody. I'm Alan Newsom, and I am happy to be here in Mayberry with you, especially considering we have this, this episode number that has been something I've been talking about for quite a while, because the 666 just didn't sound like a good episode for us to be doing, especially here to begin a brand new year. This is 2022's very first episode of Two Chairs No Waiting. So I was a little concerned about starting off with a number like that. But Court Howell, our executive producer, came up with this idea to call it 666 and 7/8. And I thought that was a absolutely great idea. And, you know, the idea was then to be able to discuss superstitions. And I realized 666 is not actually a superstition. That's in the, you know, the Bible. People believe that's the number of the beast. So it's not a number we enjoy, but it is a superstitious thing not to use that episode number as the podcast number. So that's why it got Court recommended this, and I agreed with him to think about maybe doing something about superstitions. So we all have them, and whether you want to admit it or not, I think you, no matter how hard a skeptic you are, you've probably had one or two superstitions in your life that you actually do that, you know, I don't know, like, maybe it's got to do with a crazy owl flying around, you know, that it's bad. Or maybe it's really more like, I don't know, wearing a particular pair of socks to go to the ball game to try to help win. Or maybe it's a particular shirt. And you hear it in sports all the time of these guys that, or in sports and have, they wear the same t-shirt every game under their uniform, because until they lose, they're going to do that. Or maybe they don't shave until they lose. There's all kinds of things like that. And on the Andy Griffith Show, of course, we ran into these things with Henry Bennett, of course, the 6 7/8. That's where the title 666 7/8, that's where it came from. Henry Bennett was the jinx. And everybody had agreed to let him win the TV so that he could see that he wasn't a jinx. And yet he ended up pulling out the hat size. Well, you know, that's, he jinxed himself. He jinxed himself. What do you do? So anyway, I wanted to go through that tonight. So we're going to go into some superstitions and where they came from. You know, what got them started, where they came from. We'll do a little bit of trivia, and we're going to hear from Randy Turner with This Week in Mayberry History. So we're going to have a lot of fun. So let's get a little background music, because I'm going to be doing a lot of talking. Let's see. Let's make it kind of fun. There we go. Superstitions. Tim White and the VW Boys, thank you for that background music for us. All right. So here we go. Talking about superstitions, where do they come from? You know, what is it about the number 13 that makes people nervous? I'll take another flight. You know, what makes you nervous? Why do people, by and large, avoid opening umbrellas in their house? Why do they do that? Or in a building? You know, superstitions are an odd collection or collective little beliefs that we have that are often irrational, almost always, and or are they rooted in some kind of a tradition or a belief that is so ancient that people, you know, they may find them ridiculous today, but they meant something at some point. Where do they come from? So in 2014, a study of 1,000 Americans by YouGov, it's a data analytics firm that does this kind of thing. They found that only 13% of Americans consider themselves superstitious. 13%. I think somebody may have been lying. But the same study, where only 13% said that they were superstitious, 35% of people said they considered picking up a penny for good luck. It's caution. It's caution is what it is. You know, although many people believe in or follow superstitions, the origins of common superstitions are they're unknown. A lot of people don't know where they come from. Many date back to very ancient times. So let's figure out a few of them. All right. So we got Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th. Oh my goodness. I don't even want to go into Friday the 13th. Where did this come from? You know, Barney's already decided not to watch this episode, just so you know that. You know, he's not going to watch Friday the 13th. All right, so here's the deal. So on Friday the 13th, the origins of this are actually probably go all the way back to the Lord's Supper, the supper. All right. Okay, so here's where it comes. Superstition round into bad luck for Friday the 13th comes from the biblical Last Supper. Okay. Because there were 13 people at the supper, and the next day, Jesus was arrested and crucified. It became unlucky to sit at a table with 13 people. So this is where this may have come from. It turned into a more widespread negative association with the number 13. Today, tons of buildings actually skip a 13th floor. Have you ever noticed that? You go into a tall building, there is no 13th floor. Additionally, the crucifixion of Jesus occurred on a Friday. So therefore, the combination of both a Friday and the number 13 is considered extremely unlucky. All right. So also, just so you'll know that, Loki, you remember Loki from, you know, if you watch the Marvel movies now, the superhero movies, Loki is Thor's brother in Norse mythology. He's a son of Odin. All right. So Loki, the wily trickster from Norse mythology, he introduced the world to chaos when he arrived as the 13th guest at a divine dinner party. And he tricked his fellow guests into shooting the god of joy with an arrow. So all that's where the number 13 and Friday the 13th in particular, that's why people don't like it. That's why it's a superstition. So are you worried about Friday the 13th? I mean, are you worried? I don't know. It's just caution. It's caution, as Barney would tell us, right? All right, so here's another one. All right, so spilling salt. Have you ever spilt salt on the table? All right, so here's where this came from. Spilling salt is bad luck. It's linked to a biblical event as well. So in Leonardo da Vinci's Last Supper, Judas Iscariot has his elbow on an upset container of salt. Because Judas was the one who betrayed Jesus, people believe that spilled salt is what invited the devil to whisper in his ear. Okay? It's what invited him to whisper in his ear. Therefore, spilled salt represents an invitation of the devil to possess someone. That's what they believe. It's a superstition. This is where this came from. So if a person who spilled salt then picked it up and threw it over their left shoulder, it would blind the devil, who would no longer be able to disturb that person. So that's where it came from. When you spill salt, have you ever seen that? People spill salt and they throw it over their shoulder, their left shoulder, right? So the reason they do that is to blind the devil, so he won't speak into their ears. Now, I didn't realize that was from The Last Supper. That's from The Last Supper. In Leonardo's painting, you can clearly see the spilled salt at the table. There you go. You're learning stuff. It's not actually Andy Griffith Show stuff, but I guarantee you Barney Fife would be interested in this. I promise. All right, so why is it 5 years, or no, not five, 7 years bad luck to break a mirror? So if you break a mirror, you know, it's 7 years bad luck. The most common superstitions don't just materialize out of anywhere. They're not just from nowhere. Don't just get brought out of the air. The surprising origins behind some of the most common superstitions are fascinating, in my opinion, and tragic at worst. The ancient Romans, here's where the mirror thing came from, right? The ancient Romans believed that mirrors contained fragments of our soul. So breaking a mirror signified breaking someone's health and well-being because their soul was in the mirror. Okay. Luckily, they also believed that souls regenerate every 7 years. The amount of time the mirror breaker would be unlucky before they emerged new and whole again. There were measures that could be taken to prevent the bad luck of breaking a mirror. You could take shattered pieces and bury them by the light of the moon, for example. Or you could take a fragment to a graveyard and touch it to a tombstone. In this day and age, however, I just suggest that none of these are advisable. And if you break a mirror, it's probably just okay to sweep it up and throw the pieces in the trash. I reckon, you know, if you were unlucky enough to smash one in the first place, then you've already had your share of bad luck for the day. So don't worry about it. But that's where that's coming from. So it's back, the Romans believed that your soul was in the mirror. And so it would make you have bad luck if you broke the mirror because you were breaking yourself. Yeah. So there you go. The more you know, the more you know. All right, so next up, why do people say God bless you when you sneeze? You know that one? All right, here's where this comes from. The social etiquette of blessing someone after they sneeze originates from the ancient belief that one could sneeze out their soul. They could sneeze and their soul would come out of their body. They would sneeze. That's a hard sneeze, but there it is. Yawning and sneezing were both considered high-risk activities in the time of the ancient Romans and the Greeks. There are several ancient beliefs in general about a separable soul, like the one we talked about in the mirror. It could separate for a brief period of time if something happened to you. When you dream, your soul came out of your body. That's what they believed. So it can't get back in if you're sneezing. So I don't know if you're dreaming and sneeze. I don't remember doing that. But you can't get back in because you're sneezing. That's not good. So concerned believers, people that believed in this, started saying bless you as a divine safeguard against wayward souls. Okay, so that's where that came from. That's why people were blessing you when you sneezed. All right, what about opening an umbrella? You like opening an umbrella in the house? I don't like doing that. So the ancient Egyptians is where this came from. They believed umbrellas were royal and that their shade was sacred. That's right. Opening one indoors was considered an insult to the god of the sun. Excuse me. Umbrellas were fashioned out of papyrus and peacock feathers and designed in the likeness of the Egyptian goddess of the sky. Her name was Nut. An umbrella shade was therefore sacred and strictly reserved for Egyptian nobilities. Anyone who else who dared to step into the shadow of the space was considered sacrilegious. Opening an umbrella indoors went against its natural purpose and could consequently be considered an insult to the sun god. According to some historians, that was the case. As time went by, this changed into the superstition that we have today that you shouldn't open an umbrella inside. So that's where that came from. It was an Egyptian. Huh. There you go. All right, so we got a few more of these. I'll keep them going. All right, so you see a penny, pick it up all day, you'll have good luck. Anybody ever heard that one? Yep, you've heard that one before. All right, so here's where this one comes from. Pennies were some of the first items treated as representative of good versus evil in the dichotomy of that. So good versus evil. One of society's most prevalent dichotomies is that good versus evil, wherein good is associated with the concepts such as lightness, luck, beauty, justice, and then evil is linked to selfishness and neglect and immorality. In ancient societies, people believed that certain metals, such as copper, were gifts from the gods and meant to protect humanity. Therefore, coins like pennies had lucky properties. However, those same societies also believed that an ever-present battle between good and evil forces was in play. So, a heads-up penny came to be associated with luck, while the obverse earned a less fortuitous reputation. So that's why you pick up a heads-up penny. It's heads-up, you pick it up, and all the day you'll have good luck, right? That's where it came from. So, black cats. Oh, everybody knows this one. Nobody wants a black cat messing with you. In the Middle Ages, people associated black cats with evil and therefore tried to exterminate them all. That's terrible. Terrible. I like cats. I know some people don't, but I certainly do not want to exterminate them. Back in the 14th century, the association between black cats and the devil was so prevalent that people allegedly believed they were causing the Black Death pandemic. So people believed that these cats were causing the Black Death. And tragically, they attempted to exterminate all of them as a result. Later, when the 16th century hysteria about witchcraft was at its peak, suspicious Europeans associated black cats with so-called witches, believing them to be their familiars. And this notion spread all the way to the Americas during the Salem witch trials. So that's where the whole black cat thing came from. Good versus evil. Black cats were with the devil. That's where they came from. So that's where that was. Well, what about walking under a ladder? I'm sure none of us likes to walk under a ladder. None of us. I don't want to. The superstition about walking under a ladder as being bad luck could stem from the shape of the ladder that it makes when leaning against the wall. The belief that walking under a ladder is bad luck likely stems from the importance of the number 3 in religions, such as Christianity. The doctrine of the Trinity is the belief that there exists one God who is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And since the Trinity, which is what that's called, those three, is sacred, the number 3 is sacred by extension. When a ladder is against a wall, it forms a triangle shape, right? So between the wall, the ground, and the ladder, it's a triangle. Walking underneath the ladder could be breaking the Trinity, a blasphemous offense. So that's why it's bad luck to walk under a ladder. Knocking on wood. Anybody ever do that? When you knock on wood? Knocking on wood is a tradition that stems from the ancient pagan cultures belief that spirits and gods reside in trees. Knocking on a tree trunk was therefore an attempt to rouse the gods and call upon them for protection and good luck. So that's what you're knocking on wood. That's where it came from. What about four-leaf clovers? I don't think I've ever found one. My mom just walks around and sees them. It was unbelievable. So four-leaf clover. This is where this comes from. Eve, from Adam and Eve fame. You know who Eve is. Eve was said to have taken a four-leaf clover out of Eden when she was expelled from paradise. Did you know that? I didn't know that. The odds of finding a four-leaf clover are purportedly 1 in 10,000, which my mom finds them all the time. I just can't ever find them. I can't ever find one. So my odds are zero. So that's purportedly it's 1 in 10,000, making them extremely rare to find. The legend goes when Eve learned that she was expelled from paradise, she took a four-leaf clover with her in order that she'd never forget the Garden of Eden. Now, four-leaf clovers are symbolic of luck and prosperity. See, I didn't know that. I know you guys may have known it. I think we have one more. So have you ever wished upon a star, falling star, shooting star? A Greek astronomer named Ptolemy theorized that the presence of shooting stars meant the gods were peering down from the sky and open to granting wishes. According to Ptolemy, I hope I said his name right in the same both times. According to him, this Greek astronomer, the gods had to open up the space that divides the earth sky from the divine sphere in order to watch over humanity. Shooting stars were then likely to slip through the great divide. So if you saw one blazing through the sky at night, you knew the gods were watching and listening to you. So then you would wish upon the star. So there you go. There's the source of several superstitions that we've all probably been just a little bit likely to play with over the years. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. Now it is time for some trivia. So get your thinking caps out and let's get our trivia going. We'll do a few questions and then we'll hear from Randy Turner. So trivia question number one, true or false? Opie never won a track medal. True or false? Opie never won a track medal. True or false? Last chance. Opie never won a track medal. That is true. He didn't ever win. You know, he dreamed about it, but he never won. Who said, I can't stand to wear a hat after it's been on someone else's head? Who said I can't stand to wear a hat after it's been on someone else's head? Who was it? Last chance. You got to give me the name. Who said I can't stand to wear a hat after it's been on someone else's head? Bernard P5. Barney said that. All right. All right, this one you got to get. This is the easy one. Number three, who said water and air is free? Who said water and air is free? Oh, who said water and air is free? Well, that's Gomer Pyle. Oh. Yeah, so if y'all are watching the video version, I have on my Weaver's department store hat and my Weaver's department store shirt. I am just decked out and sold out to Weaver's department store, just so you know. Go check them out. Number four, the sign on the right door of the courthouse read, so on the right door, read A, Justice of the Peace, B, Mayberry, C, welcome, or D, sheriff. The sign on the right door of the courthouse read, Justice of the Peace, Mayberry, welcome, or sheriff. All right, last chance. On the right door of the courthouse, the right door, as you're looking at the courthouse, does it say Justice of the Peace, Mayberry, welcome, or sheriff? The right door. The answer is Justice of the Peace. And if you're watching the video version of the podcast, behind me, above my head, are the two signs in the correct order, Sheriff and Justice of the Peace. So, Sheriff and Justice of the Peace, right there. So there you got it if you'd have been watching. All right, number five. Barney's gun was a .45 caliber revolver. True or false? Barney's gun was a .45 caliber revolver. True or false? Last chance. Barney's gun was a .45 caliber revolver. The answer is false. It was not. It was not a .45 caliber. So, since it wasn't a .45 caliber, what caliber was Barney's revolver? This is number six. What caliber was Barney's revolver? So what was it? What caliber was Barney's revolver? The answer is, it was a .38. It was a .38. All right. Okay, number seven. Who received an A in breathing? Who received an A in breathing? All right, last chance. You got to answer it. Who received an A in breathing? Oh, that was Barney from Mrs. Poultice, Eleanor. All right, this is the multiple choice. Number eight. Who caught 7 perch and 6 largemouth bass in one weekend? 7 perch and 6 largemouth bass in one weekend. Was it A, Goober, B, Andy, C, Barney, or D, Howard? Caught 7 perch and 6 largemouth bass. 6 largemouth bass. 7 perch and 6 largemouth bass. Goober, Andy, Barney, or Howard? The answer is Goober. Goober did that. If you heard anybody talking, it was my phone. It was trying to answer that question. All right, number nine. It's true or false? Andy carries a shovel and a rake in the squad car. True or false? This is you got to get this one. Andy carries a shovel and a rake in the squad car. True or false? Come on, you got this one. Come on. Andy carries a shovel and a rake in the squad car. The answer is that's true. Do you know what your sheriff carries in the squad, in his emergency equipment in his squad car? A shovel and a rake. Ain't you got Jack? All right, number 10, last question. Who had an Uncle Edward and a niece named Cynthia? Who had an Uncle Edward and a niece named Cynthia? All right, who was it? Last chance. Who had an Uncle Edward and a niece named Cynthia? The answer is Helen Crump. So how did you do? Was that fun? I hope you had a good time. These are all just questions for fun, just to keep you going, and I hope you enjoy them. Now, folks, we're going to hear from Randy Turner with This Week in Mayberry History.
Welcome to This Week in Mayberry History, a report by special correspondent Randy Turner of the Gomer and Cooper Pyle Comic Book Literary Guild of the Mayberry Historical Society.
Fans of The Andy Griffith Show will always remember Lorraine Tuttle as Annabelle Silby, who faked a funeral rather than admit her husband had left her, and as the little old lady shoplifter whom Barney posed as a mannequin to catch. But this talented actress had an incredibly successful career, especially as an in-demand radio actress in the era of old-time radio. Loreen was born on August the 29th, 1907, in Pleasant Lake, Indiana, in the northeast corner of the state near the Ohio and Michigan borders. It was a small town, well, not even really a town, but an unincorporated community that did include a now-defunct railroad stop. As small as the area was, Loreen grew up with connections to the entertainment industry. Her grandfather, Frank Tuttle, was a drama teacher and also managed an opera house. Her father, Claire O.V. Tuttle, was a station agent at the aforementioned railroad station, but earlier in his life, he performed in minstrel shows. While an unfortunate early form of racist entertainment, blackface minstrel shows did include skits which utilized broad humor, dancing, and music. They were thus a forerunner to vaudeville. As a child, Loreen showed a flair for performance and comedy, acting out comedy routines for her friends and family. During her childhood, her family moved to Glendale, Arizona. It was there she began taking a real interest in what would become her life's work. She took acting lessons while still a young teen. Loreen credited her drama teacher, Mrs. Easley, for early inspiration. Loreen said the teacher made her study life in real situations, a skill that she utilized the rest of her life. When Loreen was 15, her family moved again, this time to Monrovia, California in Los Angeles County. She was spotted by Gilmore Brown, the chief of the renowned Pasadena Playhouse, when he saw her perform in a high school play. Impressed, he invited her to study at the Playhouse. She began studying there and appeared in several Playhouse productions. Vaudeville was her next step. Loreen joined a vaudeville troupe called Murphy's Comedians, though vaudeville's popularity was lessening after the introduction of the lower-priced movies beginning in the second decade of the 20th century. There's no definite date that can be marked as the end of vaudeville, but many point to November the 16th, 1932, as the beginning of the end. This was the date that the KAO Theaters Corporation, which had more than 700 vaudeville houses across the country, began showing movies exclusively in New York City's Palace Theater, which had been their premier vaudeville house in the country. But for years before that date, Loreen did tour nationally with the Murphy's Comedians on the vaudeville circuit. But by the time she was in only her early 20s, Loreen attained leading lady status in what was viewed as more legitimate theater, performing as the lead in plays produced by theater companies in Salt Lake City and San Antonio. Around the same time that Loreen was playing these leads, the Great Depression began in 1929. Completely free radio, so long as one did not mind listening to some ads along the way, understandably gained immense popularity during the Depression years. This brought Loreen back to Southern California, where she joined the new medium, though originally only performing locally. She joined the talent lineup at KHJ, a CBS affiliate station in Los Angeles. In 1936, Loreen made her national debut when she joined the cast of the nationally syndicated program Hollywood Hotel, which was broadcast out of Hollywood. The program was a variety show headed by gossip columnist Luella Parsons and the actor and singer Dick Powell. Around this time, Powell was playing the juvenile leads in musicals such as 42nd Street, but completely transitioned to playing the hard-boiled detective Philip Marlowe in film noirs a decade and a half later. Loreen was just one of the many who were taken advantage of by the behemoth radio company. She and other actors were not paid a great deal to begin with, But to add insult to injury, they were not paid at all for rehearsal sessions, which were actually intensive in the early days of radio. Standing up for her and her fellow actors' rights, Lorene and another castmate, Frank Nelson, first discussed the need for actors to be treated more fairly and to be able to make a living wage without working themselves to death. Along with others, Lorene and Frank helped create the Radio Actors Guild, the predecessor of AFRA, the American Federation of Radio Actors. In a move that would have made Miss Ellie proud, Lorene later ran and won the race that made her the first female president of the AFRA Hollywood branch. During one meeting, she famously pounded the gavel so hard it broke. The local chapter had the gavel framed in tribute to Lorene. The guild forced the station to fairly compensate the talent for the time they worked throughout a show's production, not just for the brief time they were actually on the air. But Hollywood Hotel was just the beginning of what would be a legendary career in radio for Lorene, years before she eventually visited Mayberry. So that's it for this week. As always, thanks for listening, and remember to take care of yourself, take care of others, and take Andy's advice, and go out there and act like somebody.
Well, thank you, Randy. Always great, the stuff Randy finds. If you want to make sure you don't miss out on any of what he's doing around Mayberry on the internet, send him an email at turnersgrade@gmail.com, turnersgrade@gmail.com, and he'll make sure you don't miss out on anything. Well, folks, I am so glad to have had you here with me this evening. We had here in North Alabama this past, last night, a bunch of snow, and so it's knocked out my internet connection. So we have no live program this week. So hopefully I'll be able to get this published on time Tuesday, as it always does. It should come out the 4th of January, so hopefully you'll be able to see it. If you do, I want to invite you to be thinking about it. If you live in the North Alabama area, anywhere near the northwest side of Alabama for certain, over at the Decatur Princess Theater, the Princess Theater in Decatur, on January the 30th at 2 p.m., that's a Sunday at 2 p.m., they're going to be having another showing of Mayberry Man. So get your tickets. You can head over to the Princess Theater and pick up the tickets there. And I'll have a link in the show notes, or I will whenever I can get them online. But I do want to invite you there. I'll be there as Floyd, and it should be a lot of fun. And if you're interested in Mayberry Man, they did a really nice spot behind the scenes this past week that had a bunch of clips from the movie that didn't make it into the movie. So it was a lot of fun to watch. So I encourage you to head over there to their YouTube channel. You can go to YouTube and search for Mayberry Man movie, and you'll find all the stuff that they're doing there. And just head over to mayberryman.com and check them out there as well if you want to. Don't forget, you can get the stuff here at Weavers for Mayberry Man and Amazon Prime, all that. And don't forget about the Mayberry Effect either. The Mayberry Effect is a great documentary, and I think you would really enjoy it. And when the internet's out, like it is right now, I could watch those on DVD, you know, like, because I don't have any internet or nothing. So feel bad for me, but it should be all right by Tuesday, which is tomorrow. Hopefully I can get everything uploaded and ready to go. And you don't really care, but if you stuck around this long, I figured you might care. Folks, I love to hear from you. You can give me a call at 888-684-8415 and let me know what you thought about the podcast. This is how I handled the episode 666. And I want to thank Court Howell for providing me the idea. Great idea, Court. Thank you so much. And thank you for being here with me. I'd love to hear from you. Give me a call at 888-684-8415. Email me at floyd@imayberry.com. And let me know what you think. Give me your ideas. Court sent me an email with his idea. Thank you, Court. And you can do that, too. Plus, I'd like to hear, are there any superstitions that you have that would be kind of fun to share here on the podcast? Be just like Barney. All right, folks, until next week, have a great week, and we'll see you here on Two Chairs. No way.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.